Well, John Robbins, in the book Diet for a New America, you really have taken the point of view of trying to save the ecology and really, I think, relegated human health to a second point of view, which is fine. Not that you necessarily have less respect for human health. You just needed a unique point of view to take this message to people, too. And in your book, Diet for a New America, you really pointed out how we're destroying the planet at our own dinner table.
We are, and I think that it's very important that we wake up to that, because the cumulative effect of the collective choices that many of us make is together taking such a toll on the life support systems of the planet. You see, we have tended to think of nature as a collection of resources, inventory to convert into revenue, commodities. The natural world we view just as objects for our use, without any sense of respect or reverence or deep appreciation for our own interconnectedness with it. The web of life pulses with something that we have to learn to respect. Otherwise, we mechanize the world. We distrip it of all sense of sacredness, of all sense of meaning, and we become machines. And as a result, in this alienation from the spirit of nature and the spirit of life, we end up destroying the very biosphere on which our lives depend.
Give me some specifics.
Well, and a good example would be that the people have been learning, partially through your great work and others like you, to, when they look at a steak, to see the cholesterol there, to see the fat, to see the saturated fat, to see the heart disease, the stroke, the cancer, the diabetes lurking in that steak. And that's a very, very important thing. Now what's happening is people are also learning, hopefully, when they look at a hamburger, to see not only all of that, but also to see the rainforest being destroyed, to see the species becoming extinct as their habitats are removed by that same process, to see also the ground-up cow that the hamburger represents, to understand the implications and the connections of our choices so that we live again connected to the world. You see, most people, they don't know where their food comes from at all. I mean, if they think about it, it comes from the market. And they don't realize about, they're not connected to the sun and the rain and the earth and the labor of the various people that was involved in producing it and transporting it and getting it to them. And I'm trying to make those connections conscious so that we can be aware. So if we're eating a hamburger that's destroying the rainforest, we can be aware of that and see the danger in that and then maybe make the better choices.
I'd have to say that people make changes more from the point of view of animal rights, more from the point of view of ecology, than they do their own personal health. And that's been my experience. I look back at a discussion that I had once with people from Farm Animal Reform Movement, and they told me when they were a vegetarian organization out to save human health, they got no contributions. They became the Farm Animal Reform Movement and put out the message to the people in America that they'd like to make better living conditions for farm animals. They couldn't open the envelopes fast enough.
Well, different people respond in different ways. The thing that's exciting to me, and I think that what Diet for a New America did, is it connected the dots, and it showed that whichever of these doorways is your particular concern and appeals to you, calls to you, they all lead to the same place. If you're concerned about our treatment of animals and livestock and so forth, then factory farms, these confinement operations, are clearly an insult to that sensibility and sensitivity. They violate the animals so grotesquely that any person who's coming from that kind of a concern for animals is going to be offended by them. If you're concerned about human health, then as your work shows so fully, then the fat level and the lack of fiber and the toxins in today's in modern meat is an insult to the body and deeply compromises not only our cardiovascular systems but our immune systems and every possibility we have of really living to our full function and capability. If you're concerned about the ecosystems, if you're concerned about the environment, if you want us to have clean air and clean water and a food chain that isn't full of contamination and a stable climate, then you look at what are the human activities that are devastating the environment and causing it to deteriorate increasingly, and you find that modern meat production is number one on that list, and you find that when you just look at the data, when you just stand back and relax and look at where are our forests going, what is jeopardizing our climate, what is producing the carbon dioxide and the methane and the chlorofluorocarbons and the oxides of nitrogen that are emitting and rising up into the atmosphere and fouling everything. if you look at what is destroying our rivers and our trees, you end up seeing that the most important thing, the most effective thing that most individuals can do is to reduce or even stop their meat consumption in order to help preserve the very basis of life on Earth.
Well, that's a very practical thing to do. I have to tell you, I had an insult levied at me about a month and a half ago when I was on a Denver radio station. A man from the cattle industry called up, and after I got through explaining very clearly about the health hazards of eating all these animal products, he called up and called me an animal rights activist, and I felt like he was going to go on and say, just like John Robbins. But he didn't, but he was very angry. Sure gets their emotional interest, doesn't it?
Well, you know, when they get that upset, which they do, I mean, I've had a lot of experience with this, and the louder they scream, the more quietly I talk, and the more people hear me.
That's fantastic. This is Dr. John McDougall on KSRO Radio 1350, and I have with me John Robbins, and we'll be back. I usually don't open the lines during the guest time, but I would really like to hear from some of the farmers out there. I'd like to hear from some of you in the dairy industry. I'd like to hear what you have to say about what we're talking about. Explain to us why we shouldn't be concerned about the ecology from this point of view. Explain to us why we shouldn't be concerned about animal rights. Explain to us why we should continue the dietary habits that we were all raised with, habits that we know are destructive to our personal selves, and we're finding out through John Robbins and Diet for a New America that they're destructive to our environment, and they're just not nice. John, can you give us some specific examples as to how our consumption of meat products, say, well, how about water? I mean, this is a great concern today in the state of California.
And rightfully so, because of the droughts that we've been having. The California University of California Agricultural Extension at UC Davis has a publication called Soil and Water, and they did a survey of the amount of water it takes to produce a pound of various crops in the state, a pound of tomatoes and potatoes and cotton and rice and beef and apples and so forth. And the answers that they came to were amazing. In California, it takes 23 gallons of water to produce a pound of tomatoes on average, 23 gallons for 1 pound of lettuce, 33 for a pound of carrots, 49 for a pound of apples. Oranges are 65 gallons for a pound. So you get the range. For fruits and vegetables, it's from about 20 to about 70 is the range, gallons of water per pound. But for beef, the number they arrived at was 5,214 gallons of water to produce the average pound of beef in the state of California today. Now, I want to emphasize that this is from Soil and Water, the California Agricultural Extension. This is not a vegetarian front organization, you know, who might be possibly accused of manipulating the figures to their own purpose.
Of course, you know, the meat industry has come out and tried to say that those figures are incorrect. I actually got a brochure from them.
I agree that they're saying it's incorrect, but they have nothing to stand on. They just say that it's wrong. but you see where that water is going. It's not that a cow or a beef animal is drinking that much water, not in the slightest.
Uh-huh.
A very small percentage of that actually is actually consumed in that fashion. Most of it is to irrigate pasture land and to irrigate land that is growing alfalfa and other forms of hay to feed to the animals. So it's actually, but it's all involved in the, if you don't need to produce the beef, that water is available for other purposes. Now, I just want people to understand how much water that is, because we're talking about 5,214 gallons of water for your average pound of meat. That's more water than it would take to fill a stack of one-gallon water containers over a mile high per pound of beef. Or another way of thinking about it that's fairly graphic, if you take 5 showers a week, most days you take a shower, if your showers average 5 minutes each, which is fairly short, let's say you're a thrifty person, you're concerned about conserving water, and let's say your shower flow rate through your shower head is 4 gallons to the minute, which is actually a fairly full flow rate, that would mean 5 times 5 times 4 that you would use 100 gallons of water per week for your showering. 5 minutes per shower, 4 gallons per minute, 5 showers per week. That would mean in a year, 52 weeks, you would use 5,200 gallons of water for your showering for an entire year. So what this means is that in the state of California today, you actually save more water by not eating 1 pound of meat than you would by not showering for an entire year.
kind of pales the statement, shower with a friend and save water, or the other one, put a brick in your toilet to save
really,
water.
Really, it's almost a farce when people are told to do these things, which are good consciousness-raising exercises, which do save some water, and I don't oppose them. My point is that why don't we address the real problem in terms of water in the state of California? In fact, if we did not have a system of trying to graze cattle and raise cattle on desert land, which has to be irrigated to produce anything, we would not have a problem with water for human use in the state, even if our population was double what it is.
How about chickens? Are they a little bit more conservative, or are they just as bad?
Chickens are a little more conservative. They average, according to that same study, 815 gallons of water per pound. That's still an enormous amount. That represents a few months of showering for the average person for 1 pound of chicken.
How about fish? Do you ever get into the issue of eating fish, or do you think that's ecologically a sound thing to do?
No, I don't. Fish is a sort of, from an ecological point of view, somewhat of a middle ground, but there are real problems with it, and I'll tell you what they are. First of all, we are using these commercial fishing boats are using drift nets and drag nets that just, they take everything for miles that's alive in that piece of the ocean, and they kill it in order to get a small amount of fish out of there. So what's happening is we're hauling fish out of the ocean by the metric ton, and we're turning very delicate and very little understood ecosystems into the equivalent of watery deserts. We're killing what's there. It's like strip mining the oceans. Furthermore, we've been treating our oceans and our rivers and streams like garbage dumps. We've been dumping pesticides and herbicides. We've been dumping toxic chemicals of all kinds. We have agricultural runoffs into our fresh water at alarming rates. And these are heavily petrochemical based. So the result is that we have contaminated water systems. And then the fish who live in these systems, of course, collect in their own tissue, and particularly in their fat, very high concentrations of the pollutants that have been dumped into their homes. So fish is not quite, once you see the reality, you know, a lot of people think, well, I'll eat fish instead of meat, that'll take care of it. And there are some advantages there. I mean, I suppose it's a positive step, but it's like trying to cross a river to get to the safe side, because say there's a fire on your side, you have to get across. Well, taking a step onto a rock that's in the middle of the river is a good direction. Keep going, though, because if you just stay there, you're not really going to be safe.
Well, I guess the last thing that that we have to deal with is the milk, dairy products. I mean, you don't kill anything, but I suppose you have to grow that cow, and that cow makes methane, and that cow requires feed. So I suppose it comes down to the same issues, doesn't it?
It really does. That cow, you've got to feed it, and you do kill it. They do kill the dairy cows as soon as they don't produce up to a certain level. They're out of there, and they're hamburger. And you know the calves are. You see, you've got to keep that cow lactating, uh-huh. And that means impregnating it every year, and that means taking his babies away. And what happens to those babies? Well, if they're female, they're treated like little four-legged milk pumps, and they get the same treatment as their mothers. But if they're male, which is half times the case, they become veal. And I mean, you don't have to be an animal rights activist to be appalled by the way that veal is produced in this country today. It is profoundly cruel and inhumane.
Yeah, that's been put up as an example about how they take these baby little cows and put them in a very small confined area, don't they?
It's very small, John. It's truly repulsive. I mean, what they do is they take newborn calves. Their umbilical cords are still attached. They are infants, and they chain them at the neck in a crate so tightly they can't turn around. They can't move their head. And the crate is so confining, the area that they're allowed is so small, that they can't take a single step in any direction.
And they
they have more space, actually, if instead of doing that you stepped them into the trunk of your subcompact car. At least they could move around a little that way. I mean, it is a truly obscene. It's a crime against nature to treat any animal that severely. And yet this is the standard operating procedure for what is called milk-fed veal. By the way, milk-fed sounds like, or there's sometimes called special-fed. But it turns out what the diet is that they're referring to is basically government surplus skim milk powder, petroleum byproducts, antibiotics, and other drugs. And that's it. And that's all they ever get for 4 months until they are butchered.
Well, maybe the way to handle it, John Robbins, is to have everybody raise their own baby veal, and then they could see what goes on, and that would make a big difference.
Someone once said that if people had to slaughter the animals that they ate, the number of vegetarians would rise astronomically.
I'm sure it would. This is Dr. John McDougall on KSRO Radio 1350. And my guest is John Robbins. He's the author of Diet for a New America. John, let's just get into, well, I think probably the hottest topic, the hottest concern today, at least for people who are worried about our environment, is the rainforest.
Yes.
You know, what is going on there? And is it the fast food chains that are destroying the forest so that they can graze cattle and then sell it to Japan? Is that it in a nutshell?
Well, there are tropical rainforests across the equatorial world, really, all the way around the world. The Central American rainforests have been probably about now over a half destroyed in the last 40 years, mainly to produce beef. And most of that, all of that really, virtually all of it is for export, and much of that is to the United States. We import 300 million pounds of Central American rainforest beef every year into this country. Now, today, the fast food chains, McDonald's and Burger King in particular, who have been subjected to boycotts around this stuff, claim that they don't use any rainforest beef. However, I have discussed this in detail with the Meat Importers Council in New Orleans, and I have tracked it. And although I must admit it's hard to track, it's a slippery trail because there's brokers and holding companies that get involved, and it's hard to know who's buying it really. But my informed judgment at this point is that a lot of it is still up in the fast food chains. And the reason that they can get away with it, with claiming that they don't use it now, is because there's a technicality. The minute the beef arrives on the dock in New Orleans, it's officially U.S. beef. Formally, it's then labeled U.S. beef. So they can say we're only using U.S. beef when the fact of the matter is it's from animals who grazed on land that had been tropical rainforest that was cut and burned and destroyed so that they could use it as pasture.
That's a dirty, rotten trick.
I think it's terrible. See, but it points something out here, John. To these companies, the whole rainforest problem is a PR issue. And if they can deal with it at that level of image, of appearance, and not have to fundamentally face the fact that their behavior is ripping out the lungs of this planet and jeopardizing the future of life on this earth for all sentient beings, that's a hard thing to face, and they don't want to face it. They want to avoid it. So they have these little Band-Aid solutions, like changing the way the product is packaged, changing the name, having another advertising campaign, or doing small gestures of support for the rainforest that don't in any way face up to the enormous damage. And that's why people have to realize that it's in our hands. Every fast food hamburger containing rainforest beef today represents the destruction per hamburger of 55 square feet of tropical rainforest. And to me, that's not a trade. And the fact that people are doing this, that we're destroying the rainforest in order to have a product that's compromising our health so severely, makes it just almost laughable. And it would be laughable, and frankly, sometimes I do laugh about it in order to stay sane, but except we have to realize it's very serious. We are talking about issues that if we do not address them, will probably mean that our children and their children will not have a viable world in which to live.
What do you think that the people who are involved in this kind of destruction, what do you think that they're saying to themselves to help rationalize this?
To themselves, they're saying this. They're saying, all right, it's really rotten, it's really lousy, I know it, but the whole world is full of problems, and if I didn't do it, somebody else would. So if I dropped out of this, there'd be no net gain to the ecology because someone else would just take my place and the same things would happen. And this way, at least I get paid, I make my money, I profit, and so at least I can watch the world go to hell on my color TV.
Huh. And also John Robbins, author of Diet for a New America, is just crying wolf.
Well, I don't think so. I think that when they talk to the press, that's what they'll say. They try and discredit me, and they try to deny all of these things. But because they know it's... Let me give you an example. I was on National Public Radio with a representative of the National Cattlemen's Association not too long ago, and we were debating these issues. And at one point, he became quite upset and emotional, the way that because he really didn't have a leg to stand on, and I think that was partly why he was so irritated. But anyway, I just said, you know, I think that your children and your grandchildren have as much right as mine to a healthy world, to clean water, to clean air, to a stable climate, to a sustainable agriculture, to a way of life that they can look forward to with promise and hope. And he looked at me and says, yeah, you're right. And in that, it became clear that he knew that the industry that he was representing and from which he was drawing his livelihood really was an obstacle, I think that's putting it politely, to those goals. And I really began to feel for him at a human level. He is stuck in a very compromised but very dangerous position. And it becomes an ethical, it becomes an existential, I suppose even a spiritual challenge to deal with that issue where your way of making your livelihood is hurting you or hurting other people or harming the world. Then what do you do? When you see, they didn't know this in years past. It hadn't come to awareness. They're fighting it coming to awareness. They're trying to stay in denial. They're trying to block it every way they can. But the force of the information is just so strong, and the reality of it is so impressive, that the denial is crumbling, and there's a lot of human, it's a very difficult issue for these people. And I really do understand. My own dad, is, of course, as you know, founded Baskin-Robbins, and along with my uncle. And when they did that, they didn't know what we know today about ice cream being basic. Well, I suppose they might have known that it was basically butter, fat, and sugar, but they didn't know what that did to human health. They were ignorant. And when you're asleep, when you don't know things, it's a different issue. I had a dream a couple nights ago that just showed me so clearly what I'm doing here. In the dream, there was this person, and he was saying, I want to eat beef. And he was in my house, and I said, you really don't get it, do you? And he persisted. I said, look, if you're sleeping with somebody, you have someone there with you, and in your sleep, you roll over, and you pull the covers onto yourself, and you pull them off the other person, and so they're left exposed to the cold. That might happen sometimes, I guess. It doesn't mean you hate them or anything. But if someone wakes you up and shows you that you've done that, and you still won't give up the covers that you've hogged, that's a different story. And my job is to wake people up to the fact that meat production is hogging all of our resources, is pulling off the necessary energies from our society and from our ecology, all into this one place. And if people, once they're awake to it, if they don't change, then they are responsible. And I think that they're fighting, facing that responsibility.
Do you ever try and imagine that what you're talking to is people from the tobacco industry?
Yes, very similar. About 10 years gap between the two things. But the meat industry, see, the beef industry today and the meat industries as well, are the tobacco industries of the 90s. They're going through the same thing. The tobacco people in years past grew a crop, produced a product that sold well. Doctors talked about it, even recommended it for nervousness. You had ads in the magazine saying, 9 out of 10 doctors prefer this particular brand of cigarette or whatever it would be. So there wasn't the awareness yet that these people were producing a product that was killing people. They didn't know they were growing a poison. They just didn't know. But then as that awareness developed, and as the studies came in, study after study after study after study, showing incontrovertibly that tobacco kills, they were in a very difficult situation, and the best of them got out of there. And I have pity for the poor people who stayed in trying to rationalize and trying to, I don't know how they face themselves now. But the beef people are in a similar situation, and I think that people in that industry would be wise to get out of it because it's only going to get worse.
You know, there's a very, very basic difference that's discouraging for me between the tobacco industry and the beef industry, and that is that when it comes to tobacco, half the people 20 years ago could see the insanity because they didn't smoke. And the tobacco industry is quite small compared to the food industry. Today, we're in a situation where we have a much larger industry, plus 99.99% of the people are involved in the insanity, and only a very, very, very small number of people can see how how harmful it is and how inhumane, whatever term you want to use it is, to continue to consume such products as beef, chicken, and fish, and so on. And so it almost seems overwhelming.
Well, there's another side to it, though. With tobacco, the problem with tobacco is the health problem. I mean, it kills people.
Well, so with beef.
With beef, not only is it killing people, giving them heart attacks, strokes, and diabetes, and cancers, it's also destroying our world.
Yes.
And I think that
tobacco makes oxygen, doesn't it?
What?
Tobacco actually is helpful for the environment in the sense that it makes oxygen and utilizes carbon dioxide.
Well, it's a green plant. It's biomass.
For sure. Yeah. So it's almost ludicrous to be upset with the tobacco industry.
Yeah, I think actually when you compare the two, if you really, you know, understand holistically all the various levels of illness to the world, to ourselves, to our society from the two products, I would have to say that I find beef to be much more guilty.
You know, it's nice to hear you say that, John, because, you know, I have said many times before that the health hazards from the rich American diet are tremendously greater. You know, more death, disability, suffering caused by the rich foods that we've learned to consume as a birthright in this country than tobacco ever caused or alcohol ever caused. And yet we have these national campaigns against tobacco and alcohol. And I think it is only because nobody realizes that there's such a serious health hazard out there in the terms of the way we're eating. They just have not come to the level of understanding.
I know, and it's sad. And yet... like T. Colin Campbell's work up at Cornell, the China study,
mm-hmm.
This is to me one of the most impressive but it's just the latest in a long line of studies that are indicting the American diet and showing that our fat levels of consumption and our animal product based diet is just absolutely killing us.
Well, I think we're winning the battle. I think the cat's out of the bag, so to speak, and it's going to happen because the information is so overwhelming, and it is spreading so rapidly around the country. And your charisma, John, and also your writing abilities and speaking abilities have made such a tremendous difference. You know, what, 3-4 years ago, John Robbins, what, is that an ice cream cone? You know, who would know?
Yeah.
And but nowadays, you know, John Robbins wrote Diet for a New America, and you can find that book, you can find it on the shelf. Face out in every bookstore in the country. And I tell you, you know, I go to bookstores all around the country making sure there's a McDougal book here and there,
yeah,
and
right.
I've got to push aside the Diet for a New America books to just find mine.
Well, they're often next to each other.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned earlier the PBS documentary. That is really making a tremendous difference. It aired in Los Angeles for the first time in September, and over 1 million people saw it. The market share that the show got from the rating companies was 3 times greater than the level that would have been gauged outstanding success.
Wow.
And additionally, they get the ratings on a 15-minute segment basis, and it's an hour documentary, so
mm-hmm.
there were actually 4 ratings that made up the numbers of households tuned in at various times. And there's a certain curve that PBS documentaries expect to get over the course of an hour. It's a slight down. I suppose that more people, they are you know, have had enough and are turning away on average than are tuning in newly at each as the time goes on. But what was interesting was Diet for a New America, the PBS documentary, went up every section. People were calling their friends. Nobody was tuning it out. No one was pulling away. They were enthralled, and the ratings were so high. They were outstanding. They were 3 times higher than outstanding, triple outstanding.
So what does that mean to
well,
San
Francisco? Well, what happened
is
that when this... all the other PBS stations, when they learn of this, it's a hot show. And so I every day get more cities that are showing it on their PBS stations, and it's having a tremendous impact.
That PBS special, John, is it makes the point, and it doesn't let you wiggle out of it. You know, it just hits it from every point of view, the health point of view. It hits it from the ecology point of view. They don't stand a chance, John. It's not fair.
The Cattlemen's Association president was talking about that show, you know, because they tried to stop it and everything. And he said, it's not fair. That's exactly his words. It's not fair. He says, the show, it's environmental, it's spiritual, it's, and he just couldn't even complete a sentence after that. He was so upset that these things were being shown. But I want people to have this information because then they can make choices that really serve their lives.
I think it's unfortunate that a couple of common folks like you and I and Dr. Clapper and the other people involved in this thing had to put together a relatively low budget attempt to inform people It's really sad that we don't have the top professors in the universities in this country, the top government officials, that will launch such an effort and do it 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or even now.
Well, it tends to be that the people who become situated in positions of control usually have a vested interest in the system as it is or has been continuing, because they've been sort of the winners of it at a certain level of status and so forth. And it's only from the grassroots that, in fact, these deeper energies and deeper truths can emerge. And that's why it's up to each of us. We can't wait for a leader to come around and save us, somebody with lots of charisma who gallops in on his white horse and says, "I've got the answer, just follow me."
Grabs the pork chop out of your hand.
yeah, we have to say, wait a minute, this is my life. This is what I'm choosing to eat. Now, am I really choosing this? Is this really what I want? Am I really deriving pleasure from this meal? Is it really supporting my life? Or am I doing something that's dangerous here? And if so, is this something that I want to continue? Those kinds of questions are personal. They're intimate questions. And they're not questions they're questions that each of us has to answer for ourselves. But there is guidance available. We can understand the implications and the wider realities of our choices. So we can tell what impact we're likely to have on ourselves, on our world, on each other, by virtue of the different alternatives that are available. And that's the reason, John, that I was so happy to be on the show, is because I always love to chat with you, and your work has been so important. And I'm not just saying this out of, some sort of politeness, in terms of breaking down the barriers and lifting the veil so people can see directly for themselves what kind of choices they do have and have available alternatives that can save their lives.
Well, you're talking about choices, and you're talking about how people can help. And this very practical point of view, that is, not ordering the hamburger today for lunch, not ordering the chicken, nuggets for lunch. I mean, these are individual choices that are going to make a difference today in the world. And that's pretty blunt. That's pretty straightforward for people. That's pretty hard for people to deal with, because they are responsible. It's not somebody else over in the next state we're talking about. We're talking about you today at the dinner table and making a choice for a better planet by what you order.
That's exactly. And we're talking about people taking charge of their own lives and taking responsibility, having it back in their own hands. I think people are sick of being powerless, feeling powerless, and they're tired of being sick and not having any energy, and feeling, a just general distress and malaise and discomfort in their bodies and disconnection from themselves, from their life, from their bodies, from the world, from the earth. And I think that there is already a rebellion at work in a lot of our psyches and lives, where people are saying, "I've had enough of this. I'm going to take back my life. I'm going to take it into my own hands, and I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do something." And once that energy is released and triggered into action, boy, then we've got a powerful human being to deal with. And I think that the more of us that claim our power and take charge and take our power back over our own food choices and start to make food choices that are really healthy for us, I think then that there are a lot of social causes that will then benefit also. And it's exciting, because we can't really predict what's going to happen when people take power over their lives back. And I just think that's the excitement that keeps me fascinated.
So today, for the planet, for the rainforest, we're going to have a KSRO potato eat out. And so what you're going to choose today for lunch is, you're going to choose a baked potato instead of that greasy hamburger, not for yourself, not to protect your coronary arteries, not to keep or slow down the cancer processes in your breast or in your uterus or in your colon. No, not for those selfish reasons. You're going to do it for the planet. You're going to take and order a potato today instead of the wasteful foods that we've been ordered. So, that's the way we've been raised. Think about it. You can't deny it anymore, John. You put it right into their consciousness, and they can no longer deny it. The KSRO potato eat out today at lunch.
I love it.
What kind of things are you up to now?
Well, I'm doing a lot of speaking around the country in conjunction with the PBS documentary as it airs city to city to city, and it's really being picked up across the country now.
Well, I'm excited.
The number of speaking invitations that I'm getting, which was already pretty high, is even greater. So I'm on a lot of airplanes, John, and I'm sleeping in a lot of hotels, and I'm talking to a lot of people, and I'm being received with a lot of support and a lot of love and a lot of confirmation that people who have been making these changes are getting the results. They're feeling better. They are seeing the difference, and the fact that this is also contributing in unseen ways. I mean, you don't see the rainforest being destroyed when you eat the hamburger, but when that awareness is, it starts to really take root in your consciousness, you do feel a tremendous amount of uplift when you start to contribute to, in a healing way. You just feel better about yourself. So people are telling me that they're getting these kinds of results, and they're spreading the message. And
as you travel, as this becomes a more popular show, as your book, Diet for a New America, becomes a more popular, well-read book, John Robbins, do you find the meat and the dairy industry more contesting to you publicly or less?
More.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because you know what the real technique is to deal with a guy like you.
Just to ignore him.
That's right. Just ignore
you. Well,
that's
what they tried at first, but they can't do that anymore, and now they have a full-on campaign to discredit me, and they have pride in every nook and cranny of my life. And
oh, good. Just like Judge Thomas.
Exactly. I know how he feels a little bit. But, you know, I'm not presenting myself as, you know, the world's... the answer to anything. The changes that need to be made. I'm a human being struggling like every one of us to do the best I can. The facts here are what is important. Not my biography, not just me. What's important is the realities of our time and how we respond to them. And I'm glad to be a voice, to have the opportunity to speak about some of these things, because I care about them a great deal.
Well, just don't let them catch you eating a hamburger at McDonald's now.
I never do that, so there's no problem there.
Thank you very much, John.